Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bowne. Now today we're turning our attention to the latest title to be added to the Monocle family. It's called the Summer Weekly. It's our brand new newspaper that we're printing every week throughout August. And don't I know it. So we're going to take you off for a bit of a look behind the stories that we're running in the newspaper's culture section. Things like, what is the perfect beach read and should you be ashamed of yours? We'll also be celebrating 50 years of Pasha, Ibiza's legendary nightclub, and we'll get a report from Helsinki's Flow Festival, the Nordic Glastonbury, possibly. That's what your next 29 minutes looks like it'll sound like. Our first stop on our summer tour is the bookshop. Finding a good book to enjoy on the beach, at a poolside bar, or at 30,000 feet in the air can be a tricky business. With millions of titles to choose from, how do you find the one that will keep you cantering through chapters without giving your brain too much of a workout on holiday? Georgina Godwin is the presenter of Meet the Writers on Monocle 24 and our resident book expert. She chats to producer Holly about how she picks the titles to pack in her beach bag.
Georgina Colburn, welcome to The Culture Show.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about beach reads, and who better to have in to talk about beach reads than our resident book expert, Georgina. First of all, you have to read many, many books a week anyway. How do you choose which ones you then take on holiday? Which ones are not for work?
It's so difficult because I've got this pile and they're like, I'm a bit like a smack addict, I suppose. Not that I've ever been one, I'm going to point out here. But somebody who sees what they want and they kind of call to you, the siren call of books, read me next, read me, read me. And of course you can't because you've got all this kind of work reading to do. So when I go on holiday, it's like, oh, okay, I can choose from the pile finally. Then you really do still have to have some kind of system, because otherwise you're just all over the place. And so over many years, I've sort of refined it down, which is on the way to the destination, I'll read a language grammar and just kind of brush up on Spanish or French or whatever it is, but also the guidebook, so you know roughly where you're going, because I think it's a much more enjoyable experience if you some idea of what to expect. But once I get there, what I find really enhances the holiday experience is geographically appropriate or location-specific reading. And for me, if you read a book about the place that you're in while you're there, then you're just so much more there, if you know what I mean. I understand that, of course, when you're on holiday, you're going to escape. But why not immerse yourself in your surroundings?
Well, that's something that I wanted to talk to you about. Have you found that reading about the place that you're in has really enhanced a holiday you've been on?
I think because you understand the people more, you understand the place, you perhaps see more of the place than you would normally. So for instance, you can go to Cuba and read Graham Greene, Our Man in Havana, which will give you an historical look at the place. But going there and reading something like Gutierrez, who wrote this book, Dirty Havana Trilogy, gives you the underbelly. It's a kind of filthy book that tells you all about how real Cubans live and what's going on. So when you're wandering around touristy streets, when you look up at houses, you know what's going on in there. You know how much they're paying for their rent. You know how their lives work. And it just gives you a whole different level on what that means to be in that place, to be of that place.
And I guess it would encourage you to go and explore a side of a place that you might not have seen before.
Absolutely. Places that are completely off the tourist beaten track, and they lead you to, you know, different highways and byways. So my brother is a writer and has written many memoirs about Zimbabwe. And of course, those are places that I know deeply within my own childhood, within my own life. But what I find is amazing is going with people back to those places. They've only ever read it, and suddenly, you know, you can take them into the intimate details of your own life. It happens to be in this case, but of the lives of people who belong to that country.
Well, one of the great things about reading is to take you off to a faraway place or to take you into your own imagination. It is nice when you can picture the place that these books are set in. It's a bit like when you're reading a book and your hometown pops up and you've never seen it in a book before. That sort of familiarity.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think that's a very good point about familiarity, because although geographical reading is one way to do it, I think another thing that one sort of wants sometimes is just your old familiar, something that you can shrug on like a lovely cashmere cardigan. Just feels right. Something that you remember, that you can almost recite in your head, you know, a book that you feel absolutely comfortable with. And I think another vital thing, and this is terribly shallow of me, but you can judge a book by its cover. You can judge a reader by the book. And I think if you're lying by the poolside and you're reading something in pink swirly writing, possibly with girl in the title, because almost every airport bestseller seems to have that at the moment, then your poolside companion, the type of person that wants to fall into conversation with you, would be very different from the person that falls into conversation with you if, for instance, you're reading Richard Dawkins or Lawrence Krauss.
Well, that was something I wanted to talk to you about, sort of poolside snobbery, I guess. In some way, you think Holiday is a sort of place where, if you want to read a trashy novel, go to another country and read it away from prying eyes.
Absolutely, and it should be a place where you can absolutely escape. I mean, the thing about a beach read is it's got to be a page turner. It's got to be something that grabs you and keeps your attention, because there's a lot vying for it. You know, there are the other people by the pool. There are noisy holidaymakers. There is a busy taverna or whatever it is. You need something that will absolutely keep you there. Listen, I think any kind of reading's good. If you're reading, that's brilliant, because it's all mind-expanding in some sort of way. But there are so many brilliant literary novels that are entertaining and escapist too. I mean, I would say one great tip before you travel is go somewhere like Daunce, which has got to be one of the best bookshops in the world, and go there and just ask the staff for advice, because all of the people that work in these places, particularly in Daunce, really know their stuff. And you say, I'm going to South America, well, they won't just recommend Gabriel Garcia Marquez. They'll tell you to read Hector Abad or whoever. I mean, there'll be lots of other people that they can tell you about that have literary merit as well as escapism there. I mean, I think that there's a great deal to be said for just absolutely opening your mind to accepting anything, really, from Mills and Boons all the way through. I think it's fine as long as you're entertaining yourself.
And I think as well, not everyone's as avid a reader as you are. And a lot of people will only pick up a book when they are on holiday. And you're going to find a lot more if you go to the booksellers than if you go to the Amazon Top 100 list.
No, absolutely. And of course, airports, you've got, I mean, a big push by publishers at this time of year. Everybody's getting their new books out for the summer in about May. And so what this is mass market. It's lowest common denominator a lot of the time. You'll find the books with sort of large font and kind of gold sparkly covers. Or when it's aimed at men, it's kind of Hollywood-esque. It's, you know, usually a
dark
weapon.
And blue.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
A weapon in silhouette on the cover with perhaps a one word, you know, blood or, you know, doom or whatever.
A shady man in a hat in the background.
Exactly. And those, of course, will always dominate, particularly your airport bookstores. So I think it does benefit you to plan a little bit ahead, but also don't dismiss the bookstores when you get there. So, for instance, going to Buenos Aires, I think it has more bookshops than any other city in the world, Buenos Aires. But there are lots of little tiny independents there, and of course in every other city in the world. And if you go in there, there will usually be a small English language section and somebody that can tell you. And even if they can't tell you, what a wonderful journey of discovery just to go along the shelves and think, okay, well, maybe there are only two English books in here. I'll take that one and see what happens. It's all about discovery and taking a leap into the great unknown.
Literary serendipity.
Absolutely.
And just going back to your pile of books, your pile of holiday books that you have, what makes it into that pile? Because presumably you're always reading the book that's coming out in the next couple of months. What are the books that you miss that end up in that pile of, this is my, for me, reading list?
I suppose they are books that don't quite, I don't want to say merit because it sounds like it's a judgment call, but being on Meet the Writers, in which we're looking primarily at people who've sold over a million or who are really big names. So books that kind of miss that by the fact that their author isn't that well known, or it's a debut novel that really isn't being talked about very much. And I find that on Meet the Writers, we need somebody who has some kind of recognition. And so there are books that sort of come in under the radar on that. Although also there are things like poetry, for instance, quite difficult to discuss on radio. I love poetry, but I never get the chance to read a poetry book. And then there are debut novels. So many. I mean, I think Penguin alone publishes something like 400 books a month just in the UK. There's so much coming out. And often it's a book by a friend or just something you really like the look at of. And then, of course, there are classics. I mean, I am absolutely ashamed to tell you that I've never read Middlemarch, for instance.
Okay, Georgina, neither have I.
But there are a few books like that that are kind of perennially on my shelf. And I think one day I will get around to that. And I think everybody's got one like that. Normally it's, you know, War and Peace or Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire or something. But there are, you know, some old classics like that that you think I want to read, or I want to read again, of course, that back to that familiarity thing. It's so nice just to slip into a book that you know really, really well.
I always like to take one classic and one new book on holiday with me. Then you feel like you've done something for you and something that you're supposed to do.
What's your classic usually?
Oh, all sorts. But I think my favourite holiday classic has got to be Tender as the Night by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Wow. It's such a great holiday book on the French Riviera.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely book. So many books. There's so much kind of European literature. If you're going to, I mean, Greece, for instance, Victoria Hislop writes wonderfully about it. Of course, John Fowles, you go back to the Magus or a book like that. French Lieutenant's Woman gives you another good sense of place. Then you've got all the French books. There are so many people who write with that kind of south of France background. It's wonderful. And that ranges all the way from classic literature through to absolute trash. I mean, there's a lot of, and I'm saying trash in a very judgmental way. I don't mean it. But some very light reads, if you like, set there. Australia, you've got wonderful people like Thomas Keneally writing brilliantly about the country. And then, of course, so much across America. Africa, too, much, much neglected. There are so many brilliant books coming out of Africa at the moment. And you'll never find those authors troubling the top 10 in your airport, you know. So it's really worth delving a little bit further. I recently came across a book by H.J. Golokai. She's from Liberia, and she's one of only two black African women writing crime thrillers set in Africa. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant, and it's not something that immediately springs to mind. Once you read it, you think how fantastic and how great to be reading this if you indeed were in Africa.
To find out which are Georgina Godwin's top beach reads, make sure you pick up the third edition of the Monocle Summer Weekly, which is out next week. Also a worthy addition to your holiday reading stack. This week, in edition two, however, there's a romping read about the 50-year history of the Spanish superclub Pacha. Monocle's man in Madrid, Liam Aldous, was there for the club's recent birthday bash, but he's also written Ibiza, Close to Paradise, a book about the wild, wonderful years of the 70s and 80s, and the free-spirited characters who made the Balearic Isle such a beacon of hedonistic fun. For Monocle's paper, Liam looks at why the summer of 2017 is the season of suspense. The Pacha group is now a disco empire, dancing across five continents, encompassing hotels, restaurants, a record label, and even a fragrance line. But it was just sold for a reported €350 million. Pacha's colourful cast of characters, both young and old, are now preparing for an era of expansion. With talk switching to fiscal projections and fistfuls of cash, Liam meets some of the people who helped turn this Balearic club into the world's premier party brand.
Half a century is a long time in disco years. Apart from confirming that Spaniards have serious party stamina, the longevity of Pacha's familiar two-cherry logo comes down to one main ingredient, people. As far back as the Phoenician Empire, people have mused about the telluric power of Ibiza. Today, others point to the eccentric characters and iconoclasts that reside here and infect visitors with their insatiable, upbeat energy. Perhaps it's a combination of both. Either way, Catalonian club owner Ricardo Urgel understood this when he decided to expand his entertainment empire, which began in Sitges in 1967, with a second location on the hippie paradise of Ibiza in 1973.
I came here in 68, and everyone was saying to me, "Ibiza, you're mad. There isn't much more than a few hippies there. What are you going to do?" I had a hard time doing it because I didn't have the funds, but there's actually a certain grace in achieving things without money or stealing from anyone. And so I did the best I could with what I had. This was a very basic plot of land, and I made a small, simple club of just 450 square meters. Ibiza has always had such a facility for fiesta. These characters found their place on the island. It was an island that had very few people, and it was a refuge, a hiding place for some. It was a very friendly place. and the average Ibicenco had many aspects in common with the hippies.
Many of Urgel's recruits were recruiters themselves. Back in the 70s, and even to this very day, the role of the Relaciones Públicas, or PR extraordinaires, was to rally the party faithful and ensure every dance floor was full. As one of the island's indisputable PR queens, Rosetta Montenegro's reign has been sustained by her popularity, but also her penchant for a damn good time.
The minute I came here, just getting out of the plane, landing in Ibiza, I knew this was my place forever. I don't know, I even the smell, I adore it. I felt this is my home. People improvise because they were young, they were hippies from all over the world, so everyone has an idea, and it was easy to make it. We used to get whatever, a bottle of Coke, we cut it and we make a... do things for a bra, you know? It was really funny.
Now, let's not forget the go-go dancers. Charged with charging up the crowds, their contribution has been crucial to sustaining the energy level for the past 50 years. One veteran has been there for 40 of them, and from her podium, she's watched as the island's popularity has seen larger crowds swell around her. Ana Maria Noche y Día is emblematic of the eccentric characters that have helped turn Pacha and Ibiza into the world-famous wonderland that it is today, a formula that best not be forgotten.
My name is Ana Maria, and I was here first time in the 83 in holiday, and then I decided to stay forever. In Spanish, Ana Maria Noche y Día is mean Ana Maria day and night, because I was everywhere. I don't want to lose 1 minute of this party, or in the beach, in the discotheques. Everywhere I was, I tried to be all around the island, always 24 hours. I was in after-hour party in a villa, and then with the table glass, I cut my feet. And then I get translated in a kind of a hospital, because it wasn't a hospital in Ibiza, only Cruz Roja. And then in Italy, when I went to Italy, the doctor said I was going to don't walk well anymore. So I decided to become a go-go dancer. And the next year I was go-go dancer in Pacha. Ana Maria Noche y Día, of course. Yes, Spain in general was like free to do everything you want. You have not to go to anywhere, you have just to party, and was very, very free, because after Franco, I think Spain gets like 30 years party. I think so, because it was really incredible. You can go around naked and nobody tell you nothing. It was okay, it was like... fine, and was really, really freedom.
You can hear more about the island and its eccentrics by downloading my audiovisual guide, Ibiza Close to Paradise, which is published by Loewe on iTunes. It includes a treasure trove of other previously untold anecdotes about Frank Zappa, Marlon Brando, and even Pablo Escobar, and explores the enigma of Ibiza's intangible charm. And this soundtrack you're listening to, well, that's part of it as well. Produced by Michelle Gobert and Soulwax in conjunction with The Vinyl Factory, head to Soulwax's SoundCloud to hear the track in full. For Monocle in Ibiza, I'm Lee Maldus.
If that's whetted your appetite for some music, then stay tuned, because now we're zipping up to Helsinki, where this weekend the Flow Festival took place. 13 years in, Flow has established itself as one of Northern Europe's leading music festivals. This year's lineup boasted the XX, Frank Ocean, Aphex Twin and Angel Olsen, with plenty more local and international talent thrown in for good measure. Monocle's Chiara Romello is at this year's party and met American rockers The Black Lips and Finland's own Mika Joninsuo to talk Finnish festivities and summer playlists.
Mikko, what would you say Flow as a festival represents for Helsinki? Why do people love it so much?
I think it gives people a sort of easy break from everything else because it's so close by. You don't have to really travel anywhere. You can live at your home and you can wake up from your own bed and just arrive here. And it's a very almost magical the feeling in the festival, I think, especially when the weather's as it is right now. I guess it'll turn out to be the thunderstorm of the decade, I've heard. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe something happens.
The festival has changed a lot over the past few years and it's grown a lot. Why do you think that's happened? What does it owe its popularity to? Is it the choice of artists? Is it specific attention to the kind of lineup that is put together? What do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of everything, really. I think it has started with good intentions. The organizers, Tuomas and Suvi Kallio, they've always had very precise idea of the feeling of the festival, and I think it relates to everything that's happening in the festival. Of course, the lineup of the bands, but also installations or art or overall atmosphere that the festival has. I think everything is built up to be the kind of festival that it is. That's why I think it's grown over the years, and I think there's always been a place for a festival like this that actually has good bands and also big bands, because it's not easy for a small festival to organize artists like Frank Ocean.
Obviously we are here, so it makes sense to have homegrown artists, but do you think something is happening in the Finnish music scene that actually is changing, that is bubbling, that is changing for the better?
I hope so. I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in Finnish music scene that or what it has been over the last 15 or 20 years and what has happened in there, but I think a lot of interesting things are happening here right now. I think people are more interested in doing things in their own way. I think that feeds to the kind of bands that you have a variety of different bands that actually try to do something that they feel comfortable in music.
We've always done really well in all the Nordic countries. Sweden especially, Helsinki, we've always done really well. Like our promoter here is telling me that people are still talking about the last gig we did here a couple of years ago. I was like, oh yeah, now I remember that. But he said that everyone's like still talking about it and they're wondering if we can top the last one, which I know we can.
Have you had much time in Helsinki at all?
I mean, you don't really get too much time, but this is probably like our fifth or sixth time here. And today especially, because it's rare when you get a full day to explore the city, so I spent a good time today exploring the city, and I saw a really amazing like kind of garage band in front of the cathedral today, which I was really shocked. I heard a Mustang Sally playing, and there was these like teenagers playing all these like American like soul and garage covers, like in like, you know, the tourist square, and it sounded awesome. It was like really lo-fi, but sounded really cool.
In terms of where you go next, you're off to Gothenburg. How's that going to be for you?
Pretty good. It's like a late night show. And Sweden's always been really crazy for us. I think like Sweden was one of the first countries we played in Europe. Swedish audiences, I guess rock and roll is still pretty popular there. So we've always been really well received there. And we do really well. Like tonight, I like that we're playing at midnight. Tomorrow, we play even later, so I think we're more conducive to late night crowds.
I would like to ask you what kind of music you've been listening to this summer and what kind of bands evoke the feeling of summer for an imaginary playlist that you might want to recommend.
I mean, obviously, to me, the Beach Boys come to mind. Like, I really love the Beach Boys song, Be True to Your School. Uh, It's got a nice light vibe to it. The Ventures, that's really good for summer because, I mean, it's beach music. I really like a lot of girl groups, like, you know, the Crystals, the Ronettes. Summer makes you think of teenagers and adolescents and all those kind of bands, even if they weren't adolescents when they wrote those songs or played those songs, it's still about that kind of feeling. And I think the feeling of summer, you have to evoke. I mean, it's nostalgic for me, because when I feel like summer, it's, you have to have an adolescent kind of vibe for it, because it's like, you know, carefree, and who are the most carefree people in the world is like teenagers.
There's one particular song that I like that represents summer for me. It's a song by Dennis Wilson called The River Song. That's always been the most summer song for me. It's hard for me to pick some songs, but maybe the whole album of Graham Parsons' Grievous Angel, I would maybe recommend that for a summer drive throughout wherever you're driving. That's a perfect pick. Hearts on fire. My love for you brought only misery.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. For more on Flow and all of the stories in today's show, the Monocle Summer Weekly is published every Thursday throughout August. Look for it at a newsstand near you or subscribe at monocle.com. You've been listening to Culture, where my producer was Holly Fisher, and I've been Robert Bound. Join us at the same time next week. For the time being, thanks for tuning in.